I hung out in the dark room and I saw, and as stubborn as I am about it, I thought, like, this is incredibly cool.
Yeah.
And so the thing there is that it was a form of technology that taught me to think differently.
Mm.
Whereas I think any sort of Photoshop plugin or any app, it doesn't make me think differently. It just makes my life easier.
Yeah.
But it doesn't challenge me or change the way I look at something.
Yeah.
So it changed the way I looked at photography, because while working as a photojournalist, you've got to get a photograph that tells a story.
Yes.
That is objective, quote unquote, because I think you'll agree with me, believe in like objective truth in photography, but you've got to make it look like you do.
Yes.
It's got to be visually appealing, and then it's got to stand out.
That's my friend and fellow magazine journalism refugee, Ian McNaught Davis. He got on a bicycle in 2013 and attempted to ride about 4,000 kilometers. Well, he did ride 4,000 kilometers, which is bloody good going. Ian is one of the most accomplished photographers I know, and not only because of his master's in photography, which he achieved abroad, but rather the fact that he has been a photographer in an active war zone. Scratch that. You can't actually call Ukraine an active war zone yet.
Ukraine's actually been going on, like what you see now.
Yeah.
Has been going on since, when is it, 2014?
Yeah, that was the Crimea.
Exactly.
Situation.
Yeah. And so they took Donetsk, which is the eastern side of Ukraine, and Luhansk as well. And so I got there because I made some connections with people who worked for the UN. Mm. And so to get past the roadblocks, you got to be on a list. And if you're working for the UN, you get to go on those lists. That was my kind of ticket in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did some work for them for it. But that was for the sort of press credentials.
Yeah.
So we would go up along what's called the contact line.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the contact line was the front line.
Uh-huh.
And so we would go there to villages on the front line, and the front line moves.
Mm-hmm.
It gets mined and then gets kind of demined and then goes back and forth. But I was speaking to women in those villages, because most men, they're either dead or they've abandoned and they've just deserted their villages, or they're you know, sort of too far gone with, like, there was a lot of PTSD. In fact, it was basically all you saw. So I was sort of profiling or interviewing these women, and, you know, what is it like running a village there? It was a really, it's difficult to sort of sum up, because it in that severity of life, of when things are a matter of life and death, there's no time to have sort of existential thoughts. And there's something, not addictive, but something alluring about that sharpness, you know. And for me, it wasn't the sort of adrenaline of going into contact or the sort of the shelling or whatever it is. It was more how, and this is perhaps selfish, but, like, and you'll know as a freelancer, there's a lot of, like, just latent anxiety of, like, how am I going to make a living?
Yeah.
Who do I need to reach out to? Should I be networking? And for 3 weeks, that was off, you know, and you just don't step on a landmine, don't get shot or whatever. And there was just something about that, seriousness of a situation, that kind of urgency, that that was quite new to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, if you do a lot of battlefield conditions, then you know, it can go the other way, where it starts being difficult to leave. But it did show me how war is more innate than we think.
Mm.
And the fact that we're not at war sometimes is a bit of a miracle.
Yes.
You know, because it seemed like a very natural thing to slide to.
Yeah.
And that, you know, right now, you know, we're living in a, like, we're not in a war, But it is actually quite a miracle that this doesn't happen all the time.
Welcome to Unencrypted, a podcast that chronicles the rise and spread of technology from concept to consumer shelf through weekly chapters of 20 minutes or less. This week's knowledge bomb detonates now. But first,
here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Unencrypted is made possible by the good people at Advert, the technology company democratizing premium virtual display advertising for Africa. Do you want your brand baked into the stream of the world's biggest sports? Visit advert.com to request a demo and connect your message with hundreds of millions of the continent's most passionate fans. That's addirtt.com. addirtt.com. Advert. Step out of the frame and into the action.
Technology is always going to get efficient, and my perhaps outdated example now is if you look at something like National Geographic, which was the, safe to say, like a benchmark for good photography. So since we've gone digital in the early 2000s, the quality of images hasn't gone down, but it hasn't actually got better. So you'll look at a National Geographic from 1960, and there's that same intention that I see in your photographs, or a focus on a moment, a decisive moment, and you'll look at one now and you'll see it, you'll see the same thing. But because that photographer can take 1,000 pictures and not have to worry about film, the quality isn't better. If anything, it's 10% better, or something like that. So the technology photography debate and things getting smaller and easier, to me, it's less of a debate. It's more of a photographer, non-photographer thing. And I don't mean that in a sort of snobbish way. It's just, it doesn't matter how efficient things are if you're not intentional about your photographs. And obviously, a good way to get intentional about your photographs is to take loads.
I'm talking to Ian on the morning of the Made by Google event, where the big G took the wraps off of the Pixel 7 and Pixel 7 Pro. The headline photography feature is this thing called Face Unblur, where the AI engine inside the new Tensor 2 processor and Google's own machine learning smarts will try its best to make any blurry picture in your Google Photos library sharper, or sharpish. The only limitation is that you should have a Pixel 7 or 7 Pro with a Tensor 2 chip. The camera system, including the image signal processing pipeline, will also go in at the pixel level and upscale individual bits of image file to make zoomed photos clearer. Apple does something similar with the iPhone semantic rendering and deep fusion, which used to only kick in during medium to low lighting conditions. As of the iPhone 14, deep fusion enters the fray far earlier to enhance textures and details in all lighting conditions. They're calling it the photonic engine. While we may seem a long way from pinhole camera obscura type setups where there's an artist tracing over the scene projected in a dark room, we kind of aren't. The artist is just artificial intelligence, and these systems are being recomposed in near real time on the pixel level. What you see and what your smartphone captures are wildly different ideas of reality, and our memories are now truly at the mercy of what the technology manufacturers decide is their particular style.
So the bicycle was very much a icebreaker, because a lot of people would just like stop me and say, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. Come stay at my place, or whatever. And so you'd get into people's lives and that would change the way you would cycle. Or moving at such a slow pace, you can stop and photograph and really kind of plan your life around your own sort of agency.
And what sort of pictures were you taking? Just like landscapey stuff?
So
because you have a history in, you used to do with like Project Smile. And you traveled a bit with that.
So that was a question that I had to ask myself, because a lot of the questions became, what am I photographing? Because a lot of it was landscape stuff. And that's not really my thing at all. Obviously, South Africa is very beautiful and there was plenty of things to photograph. But when you're cycling from like sort of 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you think about, okay, where am I going to camp?
Yeah.
And you want to kind of, basically you want to camp in the bushes, but you don't want people to see you go into those bushes. And so around about sort of 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you're very strategic about where you sort of turn off. And that's when the good light is.
Yes.
So essentially I was missing the good light in the mornings because I just wanted to go. And then I was missing it in the evenings because I was finding a place to be homeless, you know. And a lot of the time there's beautiful scenery and you're just cycling through it.
Yes.
Because cycling is also quite hard work and you just want to kind of get it done. By the time I got to Botswana, I had to go back home because it was my brother's wedding. I couldn't get out of that. And so I left the bike in Botswana and then I took buses back through Zimbabwe, Zambia and Namibia. And in that time I got way more photographs.
Yeah.
And it was of people. And so I did decide afterwards that people photography was better when I was, it sounds obvious, but around people.
Yes.
And not cycling through places.
Yeah.
To truly understand photography, you need to look at the words that make it up. Photo, or light, and drawing, or graph, photograph. It gets even trippier when you consider photographic terms like exposure also refers to the literal amount of time you expose the sensor or the image to light. Aperture is the literal size of the lens opening. Of course, Leonardo da Vinci was involved with some sketchings of camera obscura with glass lenses integrated into the Pernal design. But it's astronomer Johannes Kepler who claims the credit for inventing the word photograph in 1604. Fast forward to 1827, and a chemical experiment results in a view from window at Le Gras. That process took 8 hours to create, which is still shorter than the amount of time it took my parents to have some of my baby pictures developed at a chemist. Crazy, right? Our species used to hand creative control over our memories to complete strangers. You need to go to 1835 and 1839 with Henry Fox Talbot and his gelatine emulsion paper, with John Herschel fixing the images to film with silver halides. Yes, that's why the app is called Halide Camera, before we arrive at our modern idea of photography. The two technologies were married into a single process in 1887 and the film camera was born.
I'm not an early adopter at all, so I was still rocking my DSLR.
Yeah.
And then a friend told me about this mirrorless camera, and just because it's new, I was kind of like, oh, like, it sounds expensive. Mm. But honestly, it was an incredible camera.
Yeah.
In that it's a fixed lens. It looks like a point and shoot.
Yeah.
I was using the X100S. It's a Fuji.
Fuji.
And the cool thing about that is that people don't react to it because it looks like a point and shoot.
Yeah.
Like it's just holiday snaps. And I'd say maybe 90% of my photographs are still on that camera.
Mm.
And that's stuff that's been in galleries at the moment. I've got an exhibition on, and all of those were taken by that old camera.
Yeah.
And I still use it today. It's my primary camera. And it's got a fixed 35mm equivalent lens. And it took a bit of a beating. It's been to Ukraine, it's been in the snow, like it's been through the wars.
Okay.
Literally.
Kodak, under the stewardship of George Eastman's philosophy of you push the buttons, we do the rest, took film photography to the masses and introduced the idea of different film styles. Fujifilm have stuck to the traditions as far as possible and are among the slowest to adopt the new shiny tech. They also make the Instax line of instant snappers that Polaroid first rolled out in the 1940s. The story goes that Edwin H. Land's daughter was impatient with the time that it took to see a picture in 1944. From there, the company was off to the races and brought influencers like Andy Warhol on board to popularize the medium. The company eventually exited stage left in 2008, and Fujifilm seized their moment. It is, thankfully, still a chemical developing process that doesn't like extreme light exposure. Pro tip, put your Instax snaps in your humid dark pocket for best developing results. But with the digital tricks of filters and film simulations.
When I looked at photography, say like at vintage photography. Yeah. I always thought, man, this is just a hipster thing.
Yeah.
This is a massive waste of time. And I'm not wrong. It is both of those things. I just sort of judged it. With vintage or with analog technology, it's so forgiving. Like, you know you're going to mess it up.
Yes.
Are you going to expose it the wrong way? Yeah. Or there's going to be grain and scratches. Yeah. And it's you walk with that image so far.
Yeah.
That you're way more forgiving, and it's a great antidote to perfectionism. Mm. So I don't have children, but I'm sure there's something about being around them so much, seeing flaws, seeing just the growth, like walking with someone, that you have a much more complex view of somebody than somebody who just makes an assumption. Mm. With darkroom technology, the photos I've walked and I've taken that picture, I've measured the light, and then I come and I develop it. And when you develop it, you've got to shake a tank in a certain way.
Yes.
And then you've got to let it stand for 40 seconds and then do it again. Yeah. And there's so many things that can go wrong. And knowing that by the time it comes out, if I look at my analog photographs, they don't compete with my digital photographs, but I like them more, you know. They've
got soul.
That's what it comes down to. And I cringe if I said this sort of 5 years ago when I thought vintage is for like hipsters. Yeah. It's always a battle because you're like, there's that sort of inner purist and inner kind of critic, and then there's the little kid who actually enjoys it. So having those sort of preset options, I think. What I've tried to do is to have more of a sort of hybrid practice.
Yeah.
So obviously there is an appeal to any kind of analog technology because it's got soul, you know, whether we're collecting vinyl or whatever it is. It's just not feasible.
Mm.
Even vintage cars are going to be modified so they don't have LRP, I think that what I'm trying to learn is to get rid of that purist, because that purist mindset is also my perfectionist mindset, in a different sort of guise, in a different snobbery, basically. So what I do is I develop my pictures, but then I'll also scan the negatives.
Yeah.
And then on Photoshop, then I'll clean up the dust or
you if there's scratches. Dirty cheat.
Yeah. Guilty. Yeah. And so there is this kind of like leeway that because to do it the other way is not only expensive, but it's also I also wonder if I'm limiting myself in a way in just doing it to be pure.
Yeah.
Because if you're just doing it to be pure, that's not too different to how I was with digital photography, where I'm just doing it to make a perfect image, and anything less than a 9 out of 10 sucks, you know. As cliche as it sounds, photography always feels like it's a journey.
Yeah.
Just because you can never make the perfect picture.
Yeah.
So anything else you can measure, you know, you could like want to hit a certain amount of profits or run your fastest race, get a personal best, you know. But somehow photography, I don't have a favorite picture that I've taken.
Yeah.
Or there isn't one where I can say I'm done.
Mm.
So is that there's that constant sort of what have I got? What is the sort of ancestry of pictures that is feeding the next one?
Mm.
I wouldn't be able to take a picture of conflict in Ukraine or a riot in Armenia if I didn't do a volunteer mission for Operation Smile.
Yeah.
Back in 2009.
Yeah.
So it's this idea that everything must feed each other.
Yeah.
Cameras have gotten really good, and it seems like we're on the cusp of a major technology leap. But for now, the magic is happening in the processing, and companies like Vivo and Oppo are building extra bits of silicone to do the photographic heavy lifting, while Apple, Samsung, and Google are carving out little enclaves of artificial intelligence within their GPUs to enhance the image signal processes. But that's a story for another day. Thank you for listening.